Hello. This is a panel, panel of one on Cybersecurity Act of 2009. I'm kind of disappointed. I was hoping some people in costume would be here, but wrong track, I guess. All right. Cybersecurity Act, it's a Senate bill. So it is just going kind of through the Senate right now. It got proposed primarily by Senator Rockefeller, a couple other prominent Democrats, Olympia Snowe and Bay, I think. So the stated intent is essentially fear that an enemy, either an actual nation or a private individual, could use the internet connection of a nuclear plant or an oil refinery or whatever to disrupt their operations and create a big problem for everybody. I think part of this was the big blackout in the Northeast a couple of years ago. Here are my notes. which was caused basically by one switch not getting switched at the right time, and it basically had a cascade effect, blew out the whole system for almost 2 weeks. So that's the official reason. But like so many things in Congress, how they actually implement it did not go particularly well from our point of view. The first thing to look at is basically what they're trying to do is trying to identify what are called critical infrastructure information systems and networks, what I'm just gonna call critical nodes. And one, identify them, two, map them, three, figure out how to protect them, and at the absolute worst, yank them off the internet if they have to. Again, in the interest of protecting them. The first question is, what is a critical infrastructure information system or network? I think we all would agree that a power plant makes a lot of sense, but what about your bank? What about a portion of the internet that doesn't control anything except for a university server? That's interesting because in other sections, the Secretary of Commerce, who has a bunch of responsibilities as far as the mapping goes, has, quote, access to any relevant, that's not a quote, is required to find any relevant data about those nodes that he can without any regard to any other law, including privacy laws. So that's why your bank suddenly starts getting kind of important, that, what is critical? Are all the member names and addresses important? They're the ones who might have a grievance against the bank, might go after it. So that's that. Just going down the law real fast, there's some stuff that's really not that important. In fact, about half it's really not that important. But then we get down to Section 8, it gives an advisory panel that's been set up, essentially a veto over the Department of Commerce's contracts with the NTIA, specifically with their domain naming powers. As I understand it, that the international community doesn't like how much we have power over them already. Adding to it's probably going to upset some people. The privacy issue. Sections 16 and 17 require the president to review the act in connection with identification management and civil liberties laws. ID management is really not that important in the rest of the acts. This sounds like they're trying to backdoor a proposal for essentially a national ID card, an electronic version. Finally, Section 18, which is what's getting everybody hot and bothered, is the president needs to implement a comprehensive national cybersecurity strategy and, quote, may declare a cybersecurity emergency and order the limitation or shutdown of internet traffic to and from any compromised federal government or United States critical infrastructure information system or network. Or, without an emergency, quote, may order the disconnection of any federal government or United States critical infrastructure information system or network in the interest of national security. So those are those two. That's Section 18, subsections 2 and 6. Subsection 3 basically sets up a cyber FEMA. We all know how good FEMA does their job. And then, actually, that's not fair to FEMA. They were okay until a couple years ago. And then Sections 9 and 10 have a very odd set of provisions, which I don't understand why they're in there, talking about promulgating rules for federal professional responsibility for cybersecurity, and then having to notify Congress when they certify any person as legal. So I think this is still a work in progress. Senator Rockefeller, in response to a lot of the criticism, has issued an edited version of this bill. But on the other hand, it's just the same stuff with a little bit broader and shiny, happier language. There's no substantive change. So, that's kind of where I am on that. Obviously, this is going to be, I think, more developed if there are more questions. So I'm just going to open the floor and maybe dive into a monologue real fast if I have to on a point. Or this will be a really short panel. Yes, sir.
I'll stir the pot a little bit here. Don't know more than just the blurbs of the bill. But here in the city of Atlanta, it is a misdemeanor to refuse to allow a police officer to commandeer private property in the performance of their duties. Obstruction of an emergency vehicle is a felony. In the event of an emergency, it doesn't seem that far out of our normal powers that we give law enforcement or security personnel to commandeer private property for short times. What specifically makes this worse?
Is the subsection 6, I think, where it talks about ordering the disconnection of any critical node in the interest of national security. What's the interest of national security, and what constitutes oversight on that? We have some situations recently that I don't think I need to elaborate on, where both parties, somebody has retaliated for other reasons. If a bank decides not to cooperate and gets disconnected, I'm not gonna make that joke, and gets disconnected as a retaliation, would it be legal? The other issue is the free speech implications. If the police go on your property in hot pursuit, and accidentally trample your Sonny Perdue for governor signs, then there's a problem, and this might make it not a problem anymore. Yes, sir.
We're recording this, so hold on.
Actually, hang on. Don't ask your question. How about when you ask your question, I'll call the next person, so while I'm answering, you can run the mic over, we can just speed it up.
Okay.
So who's next? After you. All right, right there. It's next. Go ahead.
Make it easy. Has there been any notification or any news on what they plan to do for a disconnect? Are they talking about they're going to go to the backbone, to the AT&Ts, go to the Ma Bells, and say, we're going to cut off this switch in case of a cyber emergency?
I'm guessing they're physically cutting the wire.
And then, I mean, the questions that have come from, you know, my research group have been like, okay, the internet is built on redundancy. So how many wires are we cutting, and where are we actually cutting off? Are we cutting off an entire city because, you know, Citigroup is under attack, or, you know, what's going to happen there?
In the event of, say, a nuclear plant, which I think is considered the worst case scenario, they'll just cut every wire out to the system, or they'll require that the computers which actually govern the reactor are disconnected, but, you know, the executive desktops are not going to be an issue. With regards to Citibank, which is a lot more tied in and a lot harder to get to everything, they probably would just require their webmaster to cooperate. And going back to the first question, not cooperating would be a bad thing for that individual. Okay, so who would be next if this is actually a workable system? Maybe not.
I have no idea. I haven't asked my question yet.
When
we deal with the Senate and Congress, we're talking about a lot of acts that get introduced and passed to committee. What are the probable odds of this bill, as far as priority is concerned, what are the odds that this bill is even going to reach the floor for a Senate vote or anything like that? Because as far as I'm aware, pretty much like less than about 10% of bills that get introduced actually end up even going to a floor vote. So,
correct. A bill that catches this much heat this early is unlikely to be passed, on an average bill. But not all bills are created equal. Rockefeller has a lot of seniority. He's got a lot of push. He may decide to hang his hat on this thing and ram it through anyways. The other issue, and thank you for reminding me, is that this is just a Senate bill. I'm going to go ahead and assume y'all don't know the legislative process. I apologize to anybody who does. Identical bills must be passed in the House and the Senate before they can go to the President to be signed into law. Usually, the Senate and the House will pass different laws. It goes into conference committee, which is a bi-chamber committee, which what works out the differences. That compromise bill is then voted on again, and that's the actual bill that goes to the President. So even if the Senate puts this thing through word for word, the House can throw up a fit, and uncompromised stuff might get changed. So the chances of this language going through is extremely low. The chance of something like this going through, that kind of depends on Rockefeller or somebody else who wants to pick it up and run with it.
Has the President weighed in or made an official statement on this yet?
Not to my knowledge. Obama is really pretty good about not saying anything substantive till he has to. I would guess he's not going to say anything unless he decides to throw his hat in and push this thing.
Sorry, I don't really know that much about this, but I just don't really understand what the problem is. I mean, because people are going to bitch when something goes wrong. Why didn't the government do anything? So if they're safeguarding your money or us from a nuclear attack, what's the problem? I mean, I don't know why you'd be mad about that.
I think EFF people are seeing this as the internet equivalent of the Patriot Act, where it sounds really good, everybody agrees with what they're trying to accomplish, but what are the consequences of the language? What's outside the core competency of the act? You know, the Patriot Act does some really good stuff. It does some really wacky stuff too on the margins, and we're worried about the wacky stuff on the margins. I don't think the nuclear plant is going to be a big deal. No one's going to complain about that, except the guy who, you know, can't play solitaire online while he's watching their actor. But if it's used as retaliation, that's a big deal. If it's used, what's a good example? Let's say in 3 years, a new banking regulation goes down and requiring more stringent reporting requirements for bank transfers. And Citibank says, screw you, government. We're not going to cooperate. This is illegal. You know, may or may not happen. And all of a sudden, Citibank, which is a critical information system, finds they've been cut off for national security reasons. It's really just retaliation. But there's enough legal cover for the government to have done it that the time it takes to reverse it will seriously damage Citibank. During the first stage of the financial crisis with the whole bunch of money, what was that thing called? Bailout. I'm not getting sleep right now. The banking industry executives, Citibank and Bank of America and all those, were sat in a room with the President of the Treasury and the Secretary of Treasury and the President of the Fed, and were told, you're not leaving this room until you agree. And it was very clear that they didn't agree. Bad things were going to happen, but they were all going to be legal. And that's the fear, is that there's going to be some coercion by using what the government could do but generally shouldn't. Does that answer your question?
I guess.
Maybe. Okay.
Does this seem like the appropriate path to go? I mean, they've done the vulnerability assessments on power plants and on utilities and things, and they know there are issues, yet I don't know, maybe I'm missing it. I'm not seeing bills or Senate policies saying that they need to come to a certain guideline or to a certain standard. So instead, they're creating this umbrella policy that says we can cut them off?
This bill actually does have a provision to create standards. I thought it was unimportant, so I didn't mention it. The question right before you was talking about, a lot of it makes sense, a lot of it does work the way it's supposed to work, and the way that people are not going to be too upset about. But I will point out that traditionally liberals tend to aggregate power to the central government, and traditionally conservatives tend to delegate it down to the states and local or to the people in general, except for the last 10 years. But we're not going to go there. So this may just be a liberal Democrat, no offense to him intended, who sees a problem and reacts the way he's going to react to pretty much everything, which is, let's make the federal government fix it. So,
well, trying to figure out how to phrase this while I'm being offensive to Republicans, but
fire away. I don't care. I'm a libertarian.
The courts have not overseen the Homeland Security Act. I mean, they've just abdicated responsibility to the executive branch. What assurances that the courts would actually oversee this? Would there be in the bill?
That's a good question. I think that the experience of the courts not overseeing them is a function of two factors. The first is time. Just in the past couple of years, we've really seen a lot of oversight of Homeland Security. The Guantanamo Bay decisions have come down. That's just because courts do take time. The second issue, and this also addresses this act, is that national defense is a somewhat uniquely executive function. So the legislature has oversight, but doesn't have a whole lot of direct hands-on, unlike, say, interstate commerce. So there is some deference to the executive branch in that area that there isn't in other areas. And so the Bush administration, as all administrations have done, including Obama's, has used that executive area of responsibility argument as cover. And, you know, it worked pretty well for the first couple of years. And then once pressure mounted, it did move aside. So this is also a national defense issue, is how it's being phrased. So that will operate in this arena, too. But the other issue with this is that this is a lot more far-reaching. It doesn't analogize as well to national defense. 9/11 is an example of someone physically attacking the sovereign United States. Setting up defenses in case somebody electronically does is it one more remove as far as the analogy goes. So it's going to be less of an easy sell on that national defense argument. It'll still work. It'll just, you have people looking at it a little fishier. But yeah, you'll probably have the same 5-year delay between implementation and the Supreme Court handing out a decision, the first decision on it.
I might have missed this, but is there language in the bill to describe what is a critical node, or is there a process in which a system can become a critical node described in that bill? I know we brought up banks and nuclear,
right.
But if at some point they decide Google needed to be a critical node and or anything else, I'm not saying they
Google's
would.
Google's a great example.
But I'm just trying to figure out how they would put anything under the umbrella.
What is the language in the bill is what is, quote, designated by the president, whatever that means. On the other hand, yeah. and Google is a great example. You know, it is critical in a lot of respects to how we live our lives. It is not critical to the fire, food, shelter, water. That was not the right list, that are necessary, you know, or it's not critical to United States military defense, it's not critical to power plants running, we can make the argument. That will probably be resolved in the courts unless at the time of either the debate in the House and the Senate, it's defined in the comments, which will probably guide later courts, or a signing statement by Obama, which says, I'm signing this on the understanding that this means X. And probably it's going to get defined before it actually goes into law. How it's defined is going to be, I'd like to know what they say too.
It seems like there's a lot of laws already covering nuclear power plants, and
yes,
the government controls it a lot. So why do they feel like they need this law?
That's a great question.
And that, other systems that are not covered.
Yeah. Yeah, the problem with nuclear power plants is initially because they were nuclear, and this was right after World War II, nuclear power plants were a national asset. And a lot of them, you know, can we convert them to breeder reactors? What do we do with uranium? So they're under a lot of scrutiny, but it's not in the area of their security per se. In fact, nuclear power plants are kind of notorious for having bad security, physical security. So the other interesting question is, a lot of times, you don't think about your infrastructure as needing security. New York City's water supply is a big honking lake up in upstate New York. It's about 100 miles away. They don't put chlorine in their water. They just filter out, you know, rocks and sticks and leaves and dead bodies and ship it straight into the pipes. And I'm not joking. The NYPD has got, you know, a couple hundred guys up there walking around the perimeter. But if you want to just dump nerve gas or another biological agent in the water supply, you have a pretty good chance. Oop, this is being recorded. So,
but it does demonstrate the problem.
Yeah, and it is actually is well known. But you know, I would not be surprised if a physical infrastructure bill, somebody brought up New York City's water supply, because it's a textbook, what the hell are you thinking? Example as far as security goes.
Not be able to put nerve gas and get it to.
They do test it because it goes so far. Yeah.
They test it at the beginning and it's in steel pipes all the way down. So if they can stop it before.
Yeah. There are test points but there's also New York City's water supply is crazy. They go under a river at a fault line. So think about that for a second. Mm-hmm. But that is a good point. That I just glossed over. Next question.
What makes this law different than any of the other cybersecurity type laws that they've passed or proposed?
The thing that makes it different, and this is the thing that gets everybody really worked up, you go on the EFF website, they will talk about this more than anything else, is that ability to shut down parts of the internet or yank parts off. And the fact that it's just not defined. We really don't know what this is or how it could be used. You know, this is the equivalent in some respects of the, let me phrase that. This could end up being the equivalent of the internment of Japanese citizens in World War II. Legally, there's no real problem with having done that. Morally, ethically, practically, it was just ridiculously stupid. And in our current legal understanding, there is a problem with it. But at the time, it was, okay, they could be spies, let's ship them off to camps. So that's the fear is that it's going to be, this could be a problem, let's yank it off the internet.
So the lack of review really is what?
The lack of an understanding of what it means ahead of time.
A really good example of that is, let's take 9/11. It's really obvious that your building's on fire and somebody blew it up. It's not really obvious that your bank is under attack. So when is an attack really an attack like 9/11? And when is it the campus, I work at a university, when is it when the campus IS guy, who's a little overzealous, calls down and says, I want that machine taken off right now, it's running BitTorrent. And it's a professor downloading the latest ISO from the company that's sponsoring him for the operating system for a supercomputer. He doesn't distinguish, he says BitTorrent's bad, people pirate stuff with that, turn it off now. Well, when you're talking about shutting off a system, devil's in the details. Somebody's going to make that decision somewhere, and people are fearful that somebody way up there isn't paying attention. I don't turn it off till I check. They do. That's the problem.
Another thing is my father works for a chemical company, which is how I know this. Large chemical plants are extremely intricate in their process. It will take weeks if they have to shut down to actually start back up again. If you go by like a refinery or a chemical plant, you'll see a flare going up, a big smokestack with a fire on top. That's because for them it's cheaper to burn product than to shut down and restart if there's a problem in the system. So what they're afraid of is a small problem will blow up part of the system and it'll take weeks or months to actually get that plant going again. Our refinery capacity in the United States is just about at our demand. So losing a major refinery like we did after Katrina or after Rita could do really bad things to gasoline prices, as one example.
Like it already has in the past.
That too, yeah.
I don't know much about, most of my information is highly filtered, but how much of this is a response to the growing organized attacks against infrastructure at the United States, not only from a quote-unquote terrorist organization, but what seems to be, you know, nationally backed attacks, cyber attacks.
You can say
attacks.
China. It's okay.
China.
A lot of this is a response to that. China, if I remember correctly, has actually gotten into the Pentagon computers multiple times the past couple months. And this is part of that discussion. This is one of the reasons this has been proposed.
Well, I was going to say, when you were describing the bill, you said that it keeps giving permission to be able to close down central nodes. Defensively, does it also give the potential to be able to block offensive nodes from within America that we would have control over, such as any organization? I'm trying not to say anonymous with 4chan, but that's one of the most well-known ones. Mm-hmm. Would it give the potential to be able to block off central nodes such as that as well, to block what they think may be attacking us?
Probably. And this goes back to an earlier question, at what level that is done? Do you shut down Atlanta because somebody in Atlanta is shipping out a malicious program or an attempt to take over something? I would guess that the soft fuzzy version that's going to be peddled by the bill sponsors is that this is to shut down the intercontinental pipelines and to take the Pentagon and nuclear plants off the net completely. In practice, that probably won't be what happens. So, but that's probably what we're going to be told. That's the way it works. So,
yeah, I suppose you kind of covered my question there. I was just sort of curious, when you start talking about not unplugging something to defend it, but specifically unplugging points of attack, are you talking about, you know, being able to shut down like IRC networks globally, that sort of thing, or, you know, who knows how many zombies are on, you know, Comcast's, you know, cable modem network at any given point in time saying, you know, we're going to unplug Comcast.
I think if we saw a widespread denial of service attack, which for some bizarre reason is centered on only Atlanta computers, then Atlanta might just get shut down.
Well, we actually had an incident about a week ago where our campus network suddenly died, and we get a call from...
What did you do?
Huh? No, actually, this is a rather interesting case. A botnet had decided to attack one of our machines, 1.8 million machines in this botnet. The reason why is a hacker had broken into the machine and gotten on an IRC channel and apparently ticked off the operator. So he retaliated. I can't turn off 1.8 million machines on the internet. It's just not possible. So what we had to do was block our machine from doing any traffic. Anything destined for him got dropped at the router. And the reason it took the firewall down is every time a packet comes in, it says, is this good guy? Is he bad? Yeah, he's good. Okay, let him through. And it keeps a connection table so it knows the next packet's part of that conversation, let it through. The connection table filled up. And as a result, no new conversations. Took our whole network down because one machine got attacked. Well, the only thing I could do is drop everything destined inbound or outbound for that machine, which in the case of a bank would take the bank offline because I can't go after 1.8 million machines.
Yeah, and if a bank goes down, all of your debit cards go down too from that. The other interesting thing could be the international impact of this. If, for example, we're upset with China and China's doing a lot of bad things, this is the hypothetical. You know, we're good friends with Japan and the Philippines and a couple other countries on the periphery of China. They could, under treaty, you know, if a treaty like this existed, go ahead and just shut down their links to China and limit the damage. That's a possibility too. This could spread out, kind of like we're talking about the ACTA treaty yesterday. This could end up being a new standard. Next question.
In a little bit of a different vein, is there any proactive language in the act, such as standards definitions or lip service to PCI compliance, ISO standards?
Not
or,
really.
Even physical security, such as data center security or anything like that?
There is not. There is some language requiring the Secretary of Defense or the executive branch to look at security issues, to develop a national strategy, or to develop standards. That could develop into some more proactive material, but at the moment, there's just the possibility that it happens. Is it green shirts next?
No, this guy.
Okay. You again?
Sorry. Quick question, utilities and things of the actual infrastructure, do they fall under some of the same classifications like CIPRNet and NIPRNet? Where they're gonna, like the DoD, the secured and non-secured networks for Department of Defense,
okay.
Government network.
What was the question?
Well, like public utilities, would they fall into the NIPRNet or the CIPRNet?
No.
Okay.
The issue is...
By the way, those networks are for classified military information. You're not allowed to mix classified and unclassified in the same network. I've actually operated a facility with a separate connection. They don't go over those networks. That's military classified information.
But, and this is, I think, makes an interesting question, is that moving back, the Constitution deals with national security issues like an invasion by Britain from Canada of revolutionary America. In other words, we were initially worried about redcoats marching over the border. And at that point, infrastructure like roads and eventually railroads and shipping were national security interests. So they may end up becoming, in some respects, treated similarly to actual military assets like CIPRNet. At this point, they're generally not, which is seen as part of the problem. They don't have the security consciousness the military does.
Yeah, I actually had two, and unfortunately, they both focus on two things that you said, so don't think I'm picking on you. But the first one, when you mentioned cutting the guy off that uses BitTorrent just because he's using BitTorrent. In this case, though, when you're looking at national infrastructure, nuclear power plants, whatever's the critical node, is it better from a government perspective to go ahead and just whack the connection rather than, you know, face the consequences of not? So if some E4 at Cyber Command, you know, says, oh, that's bad, and he whacks the connection and it turns out to be innocent, some guy using BitTorrent, then people complain and they turn the switch back on no matter how long it takes. You know, say it takes a week to power the plant back up. But if he's correct and it is something malicious, then he's just done the right thing.
And that's like,
well, let me do the second one, and okay, then that way we don't have to pass the microphone back and forth.
But what happens when that guy has just spent 3 years in jail, or that company, everyone has spent 3 years in jail, and they say, oh, we're sorry, we messed up?
Why, sir, are we worried about what, from the government perspective instead of a free speech and property rights perspective?
You can say anything you want, it doesn't matter.
In this case go ahead.
In this case, I'm talking, say it is a malicious attack on a nuclear power plant, because that example keeps coming up. Well, if he's incorrect and they cut the connection, and then the solution is they just have to reconnect it back up. But if he's correct, then the possibility exists that the attack succeeds. So my question is, why is that such a problem? I understand free speech and I understand all of this, but
The problem isn't with the nuclear power plant. That's okay. The problem is we're cutting this bank off because it's critical. Well, that's not actually why you cut it off. We're cutting this bank off because they did something we didn't like. Bank's losing millions of dollars.
I'm going to cut in using my superior volume now. There's a good point that nuclear power plant is an issue. Is not really an issue. Everybody kind of agrees on that one. But a bank or a chemical plant is a good example. Those are large multinational corporations. If you want to whack Roche or, what is it? Big German company is the biggest chemical plant in the world. Then that can be an issue. The other problem is if it's not a discretionary action. In other words, if there are regulations saying in event of X, you must cut somebody off, then sovereign immunity attaches to the government, and the company is just SOL. They may have lost millions of dollars, billions of dollars possibly, and they have zero recourse because sovereign immunity protects all the government actors from liability. The other issue is the free speech implications.
Well, the second part of this is the other comment about the botnet attacking your servers. Your solution was pretty much exactly what this bill is talking about, to cut the connection of the point that's being attacked. So how is that different, besides the government being able to do that, than you defending your own network in the exact same way?
The other issue on that one is the issue that we are in our government at least pays lip service to the idea of enumerated powers, which is the government can only do certain things which should be defined in the Constitution, and that in the event they start butting up against rights like freedom of speech or, in this case, their freedom of the privacy right, which is not actually enumerated, then the government has to start really justifying itself before it's legal. And so the question about this is what a private corporation can do is different. I know your school is not truly private, but what a private company can do is much, much broader than what the government can do. There is some just, you know, separation of powers, limitation of powers issues inherent in this bill that are not a factor at all for a private company or a private individual. That.
Well, also part of it, the difference of scale, though, is first off, they are very fuzzy on what critical infrastructure means. So imagine they implement a system like this and they say, oh my goodness, that machine's being attacked. Their option is not, they don't have the ability to reach into one of my network switches and shut off that port or reach into my router table and do that. What they do is cut the connection for my entire university. That cost us millions of dollars. There's research projects that are just going to die right then and there. And then all of a sudden, we're not getting grants anymore because you guys got cut off twice because somebody didn't like you. So we're going to this other university. It cost a lot of money.
Yeah, I would guess if this did go in like that, that Harvard and Oxford and Cambridge and the name universities are getting nailed because all of a sudden, let's see what we can do to them. And you'll have a couple of guys who are basically anarchists but have the technical skills. And it would be entertaining for a few people.
That would be bad if somebody essentially, they deliberately attacked us so the government would cut us off.
Yeah.
That's a really cool denial of service attack.
West Point's getting whacked too, yeah. So anyways, yeah, go ahead.
That's kind of scary.
So I think there seems to be some general agreement that there are certain provisions of this bill that are generally good, but that the bill itself is generally overbroad. Is the general position of the EFF in general to try to advocate, to advocate limiting the bill, rewriting the language so that the certain portions that are acceptable are in the bill, or the general position to try to push to have this bill killed outright?
With the caveat is I'm not an EFF member and I do not speak for EFF. I'm a lawyer, by the way. I don't think I mentioned that. I'm Christoph Fiennes, local lawyer, Casey Gilson. I'm a trial attorney, which means I do sue people. So having I enjoyed the last panel a lot because of the things they said about lawyers. But back to your question, bearing in mind that I don't represent the EFF and do not necessarily advocate their position, what I've read, though, has been that this bill is overbroad and needs to be substantially reworked or preferably chucked, and let's try again.
I have a quick question. The reach of this, we have all these drones, under a distributed attack, what about all these drone owners of these drone boxes, for example, in a public or commercial network, say Comcast, for example? Are there any provisions or any, what are the ramifications of owners of these people that own these boxes that are drones and maybe they don't even know it's being?
It would be extremely difficult to justify, and by extremely difficult I mean impossible, to justify designating the bill only allows the president to shut down or in some other way disconnect these critical information nodes or nodes of critical information physical infrastructure. So, my home computer, it would be really hard to say it's critical. Not Bill Gates, Bob Gates, who's Secretary of Defense, his home computer might be, just because he's got so much information on it. So accepting very specific circumstances like you are Bill Gates, you are Bob Gates, you are Barack Obama, you are, he's dead now, Robert McNamara, very difficult to go down to an individual level. Comcast might have to worry about if they aggregate all their information to a central Comcast location and then send it out on a very, very large connection, they might have some trouble with that large connection because Comcast Central Clearinghouse could be considered critical for the internet, whereas you and I, we're just an end user.
So if obviously we're not all critical people, why are you concerned that it's an infringement on your free speech or right to privacy? Because it doesn't really, they're not going to do anything to us individually. You can say whatever you want or look up your porn or do whatever you want. And
no one knows it. No. Because I don't bank at, First Mattress Bank of my house. I bank at Bank of America. They're not Bank of America anymore, are they? So if Bank of America has to give up all of their usernames and passwords, then my bank information is out there to a government agency, and government agents are not well known recently for necessarily minding their own business. For example, Joe the plumber, that guy in Ohio, I think 20 different state of Ohio employees got fired just for looking up his information. He suddenly became famous for no good reason. And then Joe is on a rope walk. He's just sitting there. He asks Obama a question. It happens to get on TV and make him famous. And all of a sudden, people looking up his tax records, his divorce records, his passport. So closer, farther, closer, farther. So that's the issue. The other issue, again, goes back to this enumerated powers. You know, the right to privacy is held so sacredly by the courts that if the government starts getting in that area, they have to justify themselves, and there's been no justification.
But if you wait for justification and 2 million people die because of whatever, isn't then people bitching that the government should have done something proactive?
Yeah, I mean, somebody's going to complain no matter what happens. That's welcome to public service. And what's going to happen is what happened after 9/11 is, looking back in hindsight, oh, that was stupid. Why did we do that? Whereas at the time it was, oh, this is a great idea. And this is kind of the Democrat process at work, is the pro-privacy people at the EFF are complaining because it infringes on privacy. The pro-security people are saying, well, wait a minute, security is a good idea. And, you know, Congress's job is to try and please everybody or nobody equally. And this is, we think, meaning EFF and me, and I hope other people, that this is going too far in the security, you know, or it's a bad method to protect security. You can find a better one that doesn't infringe on my rights. The other issue, and I apologize, I gotcha, is that the EFF and other groups in this arena traditionally are very, very supportive of decentralization of power, especially of speech. That's why they love the internet, because it's redundant, it's decentralized. You can't shut down the signal. This is a good try at shutting down the signal. And so just as a philosophical matter, kind of at the worry is England starts exporting fair tax, you know, something that the government doesn't like, but people do. England can get shut out on a pretext against his retaliation. And then, so it really does impact political discourse, which is very protected. It's kind of a super right, if you will. So, okay.
Is there any funding in the bill to pay for what they want to do?
There's no funding, because there's no need for funding in a federal bill to federal agencies. Congress could arguably choose not to fund it, which is one of their perks. There is some funding for grants and scholarships and some other stuff. It doesn't amount to a whole lot of money, but there's some grants for cybersecurity awareness. There's some grants for some research on security, but nothing actually giving money to the Secretary of Commerce.
Regarding
okay, you're in costume. You count.
Kinda. regarding the whole saving people from dying due to an attack versus privacy. In addition to privacy, it has to do with if there isn't an attack. And I know this is a what if question, but this bill is kind of a what if we're attacked. So, either way, counter argument is that if something is shut down mistakenly, hundreds of thousands, more than likely millions or billions of dollars could be lost. The people or committee or whoever would gain the power to say this needs to be shut down due to an attack, basically the bill, what sort of area of expertise would they be coming from? Because if someone says this needs to be shut down now, how much knowledge do they have about the industry or the area, or just the general network that they're shutting down? Do they know how much damage it would create?
The Department of Commerce has, in some respects, I am theorizing based on my other knowledge. The Department of Commerce has some people whose job is to deal with the internet, and they presumably know what they're talking about. The ultimate decision maker is going to be a political appointee. Political appointees, by definition, are appointees because they're politically well-connected, not because they're necessarily knowledgeable. As a good example, Robert Gates, who's the current Secretary of Defense, his immediate prior job was president of Texas A&M University. I'm an Aggie, whoop, I'm happy about that. But I do know that just because you're president of a large university does not mean that you totally understand the military mind. Rumsfeld had been an executive of a defense company, so he had some really good on-the-spot knowledge. And that got him into trouble because he started thinking he knew better than the generals. Another good example is Hillary Clinton, who has been a corporate lawyer and then was First Lady, and then was Senator, and now she's Secretary of State. She hasn't done a whole lot of actual diplomacy, but as a political appointee, she was felt to be a good choice as one of the faces of the nation. And she actually seems like she's getting cut out of the loop, which is unfortunate, but because it kind of screws her over. But anyways, yes, sir.
It seems like the person who's going to know the best way to handle when a critical infrastructure node is attacked is the system administrator of that system. I mean, the person who knows the network. And why does the federal government feel it necessary to intervene and tell them how to do their job?
The federal government is not interested in empowering the people, but empowering the federal government is the stock answer. I think another point is the federal government may well have created a system by which, like civil defense, where there are air raid wardens, or at least there were, who are just policemen or aldermen or firefighters in the community. You may be a cybersecurity defense warden, and you're the administrator of the network, and word comes down from your government superior saying pull the plug, and that's what you're supposed to do. That's probably how it's going to fall out, because any other way is a little hard to do. But on the other hand, there probably would also be criminal penalties for refusing that order, even if you know as a system administrator that the order is incorrect. You probably will be forced to do it anyways and just start screaming at your superior. It's an imperfect system.
I just want to add a random point of thought on this. The sort of idea of this critical node, the uncreative idea has been so far been nuclear power plants and banks for retaliation. More obvious critical nodes, even though the internet is redundant, there are a few points where if you were to shut it down, you could make the internet really problematic. The most particular obvious examples are top-level domain servers and some of these big digital interconnects, the transcontinental, like May West, May East, where if you were to say, if the government say, shut these down, you could really make it problematic for anyone in the United States to communicate over the internet, period.
Yes. Total agreement on that. Like you needed it. But
I would just like to address the gentleman back there. I didn't see exactly who was speaking about, government versus the system administrator on that network. And it's funny you should mention Bank of America, because several years ago I worked for an unnamed large financial institution who had their entire ATM and credit card processing system brought down by SQL Blaster for 12 hours. To be perfectly honest, the system administrators, even at these great institutions, aren't always that great. And yeah, if large banks are becoming a threat to other large banks, unplugging them is not a bad idea. I guess the funny thing about banks versus, chemical plants or nuclear power plants, though, is in the bank case, the value of the bank is its connectedness. As soon as you unplug the bank, it's no longer fulfilling its role as a bank. And, unless you bank at First Bank of My Mattress, then you're still not getting your money anyway. I guess that's where I'm not seeing, particularly talking about bank security, the worst case scenario for a bank is to go offline. Taking a bank offline to defend that bank as opposed to defend other banks seems counterintuitive.
I think the worst case scenario for the bank is going offline and then the run on the bank. The run on the bank is nuclear war for a bank. The issue with, for example, chemical plants is how many people do they have on site running things and overseeing things, or oil refinery, especially as we get more and more automated. And it's arguable, and I'm just throwing this out kind of as a red herring because it's interesting to me, that union agreements may make some sort of issue about how big the on-site work staff has to be, and that could affect things depending on if you're in a strong union state like New York versus a weak one like Texas.
I'm trying to remember, and actually it eludes me the name of the country right now. I feel silly for not remembering it, but there was a recent case where a country just completely revolted against its government, and the government actually shut down all internet connectivity.
It was a West African country like Guyana or somebody. I think it was Guyana, actually.
I don't remember the name of it. It seems to be my understanding that a lot of the people here at the panel aren't so much asking what if the government does its job for the first time ever. Sorry.
And the War of 1812 was pretty good. Well, the first year.
Well, my point is that what if it's not so much what if the government actually saves lives and protects people, it's what if the government abuses its power and somehow does like that government did of actually cutting off means of people being able to pay the bills and actually this bank actually getting the job done properly, right, and strong-arming those companies instead of actually protecting people. It seems that's more of what this panel's actually been about protecting people's rights and actually keeping the government from having too much power of abusing these abilities.
Yeah, the interesting thing, the reason that that government, I'm going to say it's Yana, and if I'm wrong, I apologize, shut it down was because people were using the internet to organize against the government, a lot like Iranians were doing using Twitter. And the Iranian government, which has large filters on all internet they can, shut down Twitter and shut down cell phone service. And in an attempt to rein in these demonstrations, prevent them from organizing. That's another question, you know, is Twitter's main clearinghouse, I mean, they use a main clearinghouse, can that be designated a government node, a critical node, just to shut down flash crowds forming at a convention? Or flash mobs, what's the term? I'm a lawyer.
I wanna talk about the nuclear power plants again for a minute. Three Mile Island.
Yes.
The biggest nuclear disaster in U.S. history.
I like Chernobyl better, but go ahead.
U.S. history.
Wind. Three Mile Island actually, the boom stayed inside the containment vessel. The whole system worked pretty well actually for what happened.
One of the problems with and why. Three Mile Island should have been avoided, but there were several things that happened in Cascade.
Which almost always happens in large disasters.
Horrible disasters. One of them was that there were only four phone lines going into the island. And when the scientists were trying to call in and say, shut the water back on, it's getting too hot, they couldn't get through because all the senators and everyone was getting in. Well,
government is the problem yet again.
Yeah. Where they were trying to get in and demand an update and things like that. So now most of our phone lines are VoIP, voice over IP.
And I assume R means you work in nuclear.
They all run over the internet. So now this nuclear power plant is having a problem and you shut off their internet connection.
I'm smiling. Courtney, I forgot her last name, who I did done two panels with, have made this great comment that most people who write laws do not understand the technical aspects at all. They think the internet is a set of tubes, to quote somebody recently. That's a good point. And the senator, if you ask that of Rockefeller, he's going to look at you and go, why did the nuclear plant fix that? What's their problem? It's just that's the way it works. Is that's somebody else's problem? But that's a really good point.
We actually had, there has been an incident of that similar type thing happening. How many of you here remember the internet worm, the Morris worm? Anybody here actually involved in that besides me? I'm older than dirt. The internet worm, the original, the big nasty one. It literally, we pulled the plug. We did exactly what we're talking about here. We pulled the plug and we had the problem you're talking about. Everybody who knew everybody at all the research universities, we knew each other on what a network called BitNet. That's how we communicated. We didn't actually have each other's phone numbers, and we didn't have a central clearinghouse for information. So what happened was when we pulled the plug, I knew two guys at two other universities. How do we find out what's going on? We're now in the dark. We have no central way of sharing data. Well, that's when an organization from Carnegie Mellon and MITRE was formed called CERT. And the whole purpose of that was now we have a place we can call CERT and everybody will talk to them. And we have an out-of-band communications method. We had phones. Well, with voice over IP, that's the point you're bringing up. When you go to voice over IP and everything is over voice over IP and I cut off my IP, I no longer have out-of-band and we're back to the Morris worm. We're all standing around with the cable in our hand going, now what? That actually happened. I was there for that.
So. The other interesting thing is I was actually in New York City on Manhattan Island at 9/11 and the phone lines got simply swamped. And this is a funny story, I'm going to tell it. I call my mom when we first hear about the first plane because my mom worries. And I figured it was like the Empire State Building during World War II, small plane, no big deal. Well, my mom's running out the door. She's late for an appointment. She's like, hi, I'm busy, bye. Okay. I didn't even tell her. I just like, we're fine, thanks, bye. I said, plane hit the World Trade Center, no problem, bye. She was busy. I thought it was no big deal, like that little that bomber hitting the Empire State Building. When the second plane hits, everybody figures out what's going on. Phone lines get swamped. You cannot get a call out. Meanwhile, my mom's listening to the radio on in the car, hears about the second plane, realizes what's going on, freaks out because I didn't mention my wife at all. And she and I sounded kind of weird, well, because somebody just hit the plane. So she's freaking out. She can't get a hold of me. I can't get a hold of her. We finally sent an email to my dad, who obviously lives in the same town as my mom, because they're still married. And I realized I was saying that sounds stupid. And he called her because Texas phone lines were no big deal. So the fact that the internet and voice over IP can get swamped is a big deal, especially as we're moving farther and farther away from phone lines, you know, actual honest to goodness voice phone lines. And that may be, they may have to set up a special hardened system that is, can only be used by the government or only for certain communications, or they may have to set up a you know, something with major filtering software on it. Yeah, so way in the back.
I guess I was also wondering how this would apply in terms of, since we're talking about politicians, politics as a whole, since so much of donations these days are going towards internet-based donations, and oftentimes it's instantly after particular events hit the news, like just as an example from the 2008 election, pretty much immediately after the Hillary Clinton crying thing, there were a lot of people who jumped online and instantly started donating. But what happens in cases where then you have political opponents who, through some method, go ahead and have their, you know, that person's network dropped because it's been attacked or whatever? And most likely there were, you know, attempts at denial of service attacks at that point anyway, so you could instantly justify that and thus end up hitting political opponents as well, so as to
I think that's a valid concern. I think that the timing on that would be so transparent that you couldn't get away with it. It would be awfully suspicious if Republican president shut down Democrat challenger at such an opportune moment. For example, Jeb Bush caught so much heat for when he chose to purge the Florida voter rolls right before the 2000 election. If he'd done it 3 months earlier or 2 months after the election, it wouldn't have been a big deal. So I think that practically it wouldn't work. Someone may try it. No one said politicians are smart. But I think as a general rule, it would just be too obvious. It'd be hard to get away with.
To partly answer your question about administrators, the local guy knows what's going on. It's not uncommon when administrators get together, we all talk to each other and complain because we know the right thing to do, but politically we can't do it. And I'm giving an example of what that means. How many people in here use a separate user ID and password on every account they make? You guys are the unusual ones. You're probably, half of you in here are hackers or computer types, right? Okay. You do that with the normal population, you'll see one or two hands maybe in a room this size. Maybe not even any hands. How many of you answer the question, your mom's maiden name is Chair, and your favorite car was a cabbage? And it's different answer on every site. Yeah, there's a couple in here, okay? Well, that's what's considered best practice. And what the reason, if you go to the website where they talk about this bill in the articles, what they reference is a report that came out that said that the organizations, the people administering these systems, aren't doing the best practices and therefore are vulnerable. And if they're not doing best practices and there's always a hole, we have to be prepared to pull the plug in case something catastrophic goes wrong. The problem is, and I think the fear you brought up, you pointed out, is it's so fuzzy, people are fearful where they're going to point that digital gun.
Regarding the whole corporate security thing, again, an unnamed utility expense management company, there was one guy appointed head of security because all of a sudden the credit card companies were like, hey, we should have security. So our company was like, oh, well, we should get on that. I was one of maybe seven people that went to this meeting, and I was QA. I wasn't even a developer. Mm-hmm. And so I brought it up to my manager, who did not go to the meeting, and he's like, Oh yeah, we have security issues. Okay. Why am I finding all these security holes in quality assurance? Because it would cost too much money to go back and fix that.
Yeah, I mean, it's a risk reward matrix that they decided the risk was worth it. Hopefully they were right. But the federal government rightfully takes the position of our risk reward matrix is different than private company because if we lose, it's not just money. So that's a really good point though. And the previous discussion about people are the biggest security hole as far as electronic systems go, bar none. Anybody else? Once, twice? Sold. All right. I think we're basically actually right out of time now. So good job.